Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9 to 5 for a 5 to 9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
You know how you always want to know about everyone else's money? On the podcast, What We Spend, guests will, for 1 week, tell us everything they spend their money on.
My son slammed $6 worth of blueberries in 5 minutes.
And everything that makes them feel.
I want to own a house. I want to have a child. But this morning, I really wanted a coffee.
Because at the end of the day, money is always about more than your balance. Listen to and follow What We Spend, an Odyssey original podcast. Available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, yeah. What's going on, DMV? You know who it is. Youngest in Charge Movement. Linnell Willingham here with you live and local on 106.7 The Fan. And always streaming live nationally on the always free Odyssey app. Ride with me to take you up to 10 o'clock here on this Monday night edition of Overtime. Plenty to get to. Jam-packed show for you. Taking your calls, as always, little top Ben Strober behind the glass. You can reach him at 1-800-636-1067. He'll get you to the airwaves safely. A jam-packed show. First of all, was someone cutting onions during TJ Oshie's retirement press conference? Good gracious. Shout out to G&D handling that the proper way. What an event that was. Getting to watch it on the Monumental Sports Network, my absolute favorite regional sports network. Love it. Super excited to see that announcement happen earlier today. A really big moment. Really big moment for TJ Oshie. And if you're just getting in your car, if you're just picking up your kid from summer camp or from daycare, here is the moment that was TJ Oshie calling it a career with the Washington Capitals.
So to my family, friends, coaches, trainers, teammates, fans, and to the game of hockey, promise you this. The moment my skates touched the ice, I gave you everything I had. With that, after 17 years in the NHL, I'd like to officially announce my retirement. Thank you.
Tear-jerking moment from earlier this afternoon, man. It just, first of all, shout out to the Monumental Sports Network, shout out to the Caps for handling this thing as well as they did. Good crowd out there, friends and family out there. The broadcast was phenomenal. The backdrop was beautiful. It felt like a big time moment. And I think sometimes when it comes to sports, local sports at that, it is hard to make a moment feel super special that you already anticipated was going to happen, right? Like, we know the injury history of TJ Oshie over the past several years, so the actual announcement itself I don't think is a shocker to anyone, but I will say this, shocker to, I don't even want to call it a shocker, impressed is what I am with how it all went down, Monumental's coverage of it, the backdrop. It just looked like a first-class event from a first-class organization, and I'm glad TJ Oshie, I was able to get his flowers in front of his friends and family.
I feel like there's no one more deserving other than Ovechkin at this point in this Capitals organization coming here from St. Louis, what he did, such a pivotal piece in the team that won the Stanley Cup. He was a pivotal piece in years even where they didn't win,
right.
Had some really great playoff runs, but I'll never forget the first time I saw TJ Oshie play. When I was really young, you remember the Winter Olympics where the U.S. Mm-hmm. upset Russia?
Yes.
Not quite the Miracle on Ice of 1980, but you know, similar scale where the U.S. beats Russia in a shootout, and that's because TJ Oshie, I think he went like 10 times in that shootout. And when he came to D.C., I was so steamed up. I was like, man, this is our breakaway guy, and he had a great career taking shootouts for Washington. And you know, just being the player he was, the person he was, is what makes him so special, and you can tell how much fans appreciate him. He's an American guy. which I
can
think
you say that part again. He's got some American blood.
That's
in
what I always like. Really yes. stuck out to me. Him and Carlson are the mm-hmm. two American guys. Yes. You know, you got to have a little bit of national pride 100%. For guys on your team. So 100%. Oshie embodied that for me.
100%. So my introduction to TJ Oshie, I mention you all the time. I am a Caps fan that is a bandwagon Caps fan, and when Oshie first burst onto the scene, it kind of felt like, ooh, is this going to be the guy that replaces Alex Ovechkin as the most popular guy on the team, the guy that everyone knows? And, you know, lo and behold, he became that guy. You couldn't go anywhere without seeing that Oshie jersey anywhere for a long, long time, man. And, Ben, you laid it out perfectly, just a super integral part in that Stanley Cup final run. Obviously, hockey's a brutal sport. We joke on here all the time about how no one cares about hockey and the ratings, and basketball fans and hockey fans just can't get along. Leave us in a room together for too long, and we'll be throwing pucks and basketballs at each other. But there is a level of respect that you have for the physicality and the physical nature of the NHL, and for Oshie to have the career, quite honestly, get cut short because of injuries is super disheartening. But one thing that I'm a big proponent of, and you know, in some of my stuff that I do off air and side ventures and things like that, one thing that I'm really trying to become an advocate for is helping kids transition from being a player to being a member of functioning society. Whether that's a high school kid that didn't get a college scholarship, whether that's a college kid that didn't make it to the next level, helping these dudes transition to the next phase of their life, I think is huge. I can speak to it. When I tore my ACL, there is like, and I realized, damn, man, you probably ain't going to be able to play no more. Like, it's probably better for you to hang it up and get into broadcasting. There's an identity that comes with being an athlete. And I think a lot of times, especially with high school and college kids, they struggle to find that identity post-career. And I talked to so many different guys, and it's embarrassing. We joan on them. Ben, you've seen it. How many dudes you know that graduated from high school in 2017 still got the Huddle bio in their Twitter? Or still got the Huddle link in their Twitter bio?
I see it all the time, especially from the players who were really good high mm-hmm. school players that maybe get opportunities to go D1, but things don't work out, whether it's a behavioral thing or they just never really get an opportunity to yes. showcase their skill at the next level. And I think it's really tough because, you know, when you're the man, you're the big man on campus
right.
of your high school and your sport, you feel on top of the world. You feel like nothing is going to stop you from being a professional or at least an elite college player. But in reality, most people aren't that.
No, they're not. And I bring that up because I thought about TJ Oshie as he's talking. He was so emotional, man. I'm was sitting there watching in studio with Ben and Darius, and he couldn't get himself together. I mean, and I understand it totally because it's super emotional. You're out there in front of friends, family. The other part of this that I instantly thought of when he's getting all emotional is like, is this him having the realization that it's over? With the balloons up, with Ted Leontis out there, with his teammates out there, was him at the podium today that realization that, damn, it's finally over? Damn, it's finally over. That's tough. That's tough, and I, you know, send my well wishes to him, his family, the people that are close to him, you know, and hope that he's able to have a smooth transition and from being a NHL superstar to a regular functioning member of society. Based on how well he speaks, I think he's got some media chops in a media future.
I've been seeing that circling yeah. around social media. I'm not sure if that's in his cards or that's in his plans, but hey, I'd love to see it.
Would they bring him to the pre and post coverage on the Monumental Sports Network is something that, you know, we'll definitely be monitoring. But
you know, I think he's got some connections over there.
I would say yeah. just a few.
Just the guy that owns the network.
You know, if he wants to, I think that would be available to him. But it goes to a bigger picture conversation, and we always try to, you know, centralize everything, keep it local. But just awesome moment for him, and I just hope that he finds the transition to being a regular member of society to be easy. Super excited for TJ Oshie, one of the best Washington Capitals. Definitely a big part if you're part of the youngest in charge movement of your childhood, if you're an older member, an older fan rather, of the Caps. Super integral in that Stanley Cup run that they had back in 18. So best wishes moving forward to our guy TJ Oshie. A lot to get to here on this Monday night edition of Overtime. We'll get to the NBA Finals coming up here in a second. There was a massive. Let me just try to improvise here on the fly here. You know the dude that wrote this article, right? From the Baltimore Sun.
Yeah, I do.
His name is
Taylor Lyons.
Taylor Lyons. Is this a Lyons bomb? Is that what we're calling this?
He is very well known for, you know, writing these kind of pieces because he did very similar work when he worked for the Diamondback at Maryland. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, to his credit, he was a guy that was able to get the athletic department, you know, a little bit frustrated with him at times because of how good he was at his job. And I have to say, he did a fantastic job with the piece that came out today.
Excellent reporting. A Terps bombshell dropping in the Baltimore Sun earlier this afternoon. Kevin Sheehan, host of the Kevin Sheehan Show, weekdays 10 to 1 on our sister station, the Team 980. He's going to join us at about 8:20 to discuss the ins and outs of that piece. But, I mean, there's so much going on. But we're going to spend a pretty good amount of time on that because when you think about the ever-changing landscape of collegiate athletics and then some of the details that were divulged in this piece written in the Baltimore Sun, it makes you think, as a Terp fan, can they survive in the ever-changing landscape of college athletics? And right now the answer looks like no. So we'll see. Ben, I told you earlier after reading it, I thought we owed Kevin Willard an apology. After reading it again for a second time, we don't know Kevin Willard a damn apology.
I was going to say, there's no way.
Because
you can look at it both ways. Obviously, you're going to break it down fully for the audience here, but there's a lot of blame on both sides.
For sure. And I wasn't familiar with some of the demons of Damon Evans' past. I give a lot of credit to the university for giving him that opportunity and allowing him to use it as a stepping stone. But at the end of the day, and we'll get to it in great detail coming up top of the 8 o'clock hour. But I mean, just straight gas being thrown by the Baltimore Sun, giving you some of the ins and outs as to why things went south in College Park for Kevin Willard and Damon Evans, now no longer the AD. I think the big winner from this, and we'll mention that as well, top of the 8 o'clock hour, is Buzz Williams. Buzz Williams is the biggest winner in this entire situation. Kevin Willard walked, so Buzz Williams hopefully can run here in the future with the Terps.
I just think it's incredible at this point. If you read this article, you even wonder, how did he even get hired?
Talking about Kevin
Buzz.
Or Buzz. Because they got their ducks in a row, and they were able to, we'll get to it at 8 o'clock, but they got their ducks in a row fast, and they were able to provide him with promises and resources that would make that job in College Park a hell of a lot more tantalizing. We will get to the Baltimore Sun Terps bombshell that was dropped earlier this afternoon. That's coming up top of the 8 o'clock hour. A lot more to get to. As I mentioned, though, the Commanders mandatory minicamp underway tomorrow. We'll look at some of the top storylines heading into mandatory minicamp. The D.C. Defenders hopefully going to hoist some hardware coming up next weekend as they take on Michigan. Little Homer nugget in this whole story, right? The one thing that is very interesting to me, and a side note, I actually played against this cat, went to Sherwood High School, Marcus Sims of Michigan, is absolute dog from the DMV area, from this neck of the woods. So super cool for him to be going up against his hometown team. NFL news here real quick that we'll discuss a little bit later on. Jair Alexander and Jermaine Pratt cut. Jair Alexander, the highly touted corner of the Green Bay Packers, and then Jermaine Pratt, to me, one of the more underrated linebackers in all the National Football League, being let loose from Cincy. I wonder if that has anything to do with Trey Hendrickson, maybe being some movement on that front. It'll be interesting. 1-800-636-1067 is the number. 1-800-636-1067 is the number. We'll take a quick timeout. When we come back, we will get into Game 2 of the NBA Finals. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Ben, you owe me some bread. You said yesterday on these very airwaves, I told you what was going to happen. I said you can't fake desperation. And right now, if you're into your cooling after winning Game 1, SGA and the Thunder last night.
I'll give you that. You got the win yesterday, but next pick you give out, that's not hitting. No chance.
Here we go. Maybe a little competition we have running here on Overtime. A lot more to get to. A little top Ben Strober taking your calls at 1-800-636-1067. When we get back, Game 2 of the NBA Finals, OKC tying the series up at a game apiece. Is that all she wrote for Tyrese Halliburton and the Pacers? We'll chew on that next. This is The Fan.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
You know how you always want to know about everyone else's money? Well, then listen to What We Spend, available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
one 800 636 1067 is the number. It's how you reach me right here on The Fan. You're tapped into the youngest in Charles and O. Willingham. I'll take you up to 10 o'clock tonight here on this Monday night edition of Overtime. Coming up in exactly 1 hour, Kevin Sheehan, host of The Kevin Sheehan Show, weekdays 10 to 1 on the Team 980. He's going to join us to try and make sense of the bombshell article that was dropped earlier this afternoon in the Baltimore Sun, detailing the messy exits of Kevin Willard and Damon Evans from the University of Maryland. Can't wait to get into that. We'll do so bottom of this hour. But before we get into that, we're going to let it breathe for a little bit, because I'm telling you, Top, I'm going scorched earth. Because I don't know how I feel right now about this. And I'm it's one of those situations where I haven't seen anyone else talk about it all day long. So I get the benefit of not having my opinion be skewed by others. Because that's just natural when you listen to your contemporaries and your colleagues. You agree with certain things. You disagree with certain things. Before we get into it in full detail, I just think my overarching thought after reading it, and I'll tweet the link out as well. It's at NELL_BTP. I said it before we took the last break. My overarching thought about what was divulged in that article is Maryland can't keep up in the arms race of the new college athletics landscape. They can't. Not unless they're able to. Now, I say that, but they just landed Buzz Williams, and that recruiting and transfer portal class that they got coming in next year is pretty damn good. They'll probably be a preseason top 25 team just based off of who they have. I just worry about their ability to keep up in football. Basketball, I think reputation and tradition may help them, but like football, I don't know, man.
Well, as a member of the media at Maryland, and I came onto your show, I called in to kind of discuss this with you when the initial report broke that the NCAA house case had just come to a conclusion. And, you know, later in the year around basketball season, we get the press release saying that they were making significant budget cuts in the athletic department. That included there'd be no more food provided to the media. And if you tell that to somebody that you're friends with or on the street, they go, I don't care that you can't have a Chick-fil-A sandwich before the game. But
yes,
it's the principle. It's like, we don't have
Every other program in the world, Ben, has it. And they don't. Yeah.
Also, the first line of that press release is due to the changing landscape of college athletics. So what does that tell you?
AKA, we broke. We broke. That's what we're telling you straight up. We're broke. We don't got the money. We got, it's the old adage of when you're driving home from somewhere and you go, Mom, Dad, can we stop at McDonald's? You got McDonald's money? Maryland doesn't have McDonald's money. Let's call it like a TI is, man. Maryland doesn't have McDonald's money. And for that reason, Kevin Willard took his talents to Burger King. Now, Kevin Willard's, he seems like a jerk based off the article. We're going to get into it. I'm going to stop teasing and tap dancing around it. But the article paints him out as a greedy monster who just was never going to be happy at the University of Maryland because of the relationship with him and old Damon Evans. So we'll see. We'll get you that in full detail coming up, top of the 8 o'clock hour, that Terps bombshell that dropped in the Baltimore Sun this afternoon. If you want to get ahead and rejoin the conversation at 8, I'll retweet the link out. It is at NELL_BTP. NBA Finals Game 2 last night, though. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander continuing what I am now calling one of the all-time great scoring seasons in the history of the NBA. Argue with somebody you love, not me. I hope you love me. If you do, I love you back. But argue with somebody else. Don't ring my line talking about, and I'm talking about you old heads out there that have so much to say about new age basketball and there's no defense and too many threes. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander would cook the damn plumbers and electricians that Larry Bird's ass was playing against back in the day. Are you watching this dude play? Three-level score, as dynamic as they come. yesterday on the airwaves, I called him a 6'7 Kevin Durant. Like, that's the way that he plays in terms of the ability to get to whatever spot he wants to, raising up in the mid-range. Heading into the finals, if you combined his regular season scoring output and his playoff scoring output, it was the most points entering an NBA finals since Michael Jordan back in 1993. What he accomplished last night, nasty. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, with his performance last night in Game 2, now has the most points ever in the first two games in the NBA Finals. He made his finals debut this year, obviously. OKC's never made the big dance while he's been there. His 38 points in Game 1, and then the 34 points last night, the most ever in someone's first two games of the NBA Finals. So argue, like I said, with somebody that you love. He is having one of the all-time elite scoring seasons, and the reason I love him, call me a groupie, you can call me a fanboy. He literally has excess aura. He has a surplus of aura talking about Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. Here he is talking post-game about why having the final scoring record really not that big of a deal.
I'm being myself. I don't think I tried to reinvent the wheel or step up to the plate with a different mindset. Just try to attack the game the right way. I think I've done a pretty good job of that so far. Now I would trade the points for two W's for sure, but you know, this is where our feet are, this is where we are, and you can't go back in the past. You can only try to make the future better, so that's what I'm focused on.
Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, love the maturity he showed. He'd rather be up two games to none. The hell with him having that point record. And I agree with him, because at the end of the day, if they don't finish the deal, if they don't end up hoisting that O'Brien trophy at the end of this series, it's all for nothing. It's all for nothing. Now, one thing that's been frustrating, I guess, in this series, I can't even call it frustrating. It's just an attaboy and a kudos to SGA. They can't guard him. They simply can't guard him. If you're watching these things, if you've watched these first two games, the Indiana Pacer defenders, it's like he's doing cone work out there. Whap, 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 raise to the spot. Get to the spot, raise up. Whap, 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 get to the low post, raise up. Turnaround jumper. Three-pointer in transition. Mitty God. Last night he actually got back to the free throw line 12 different times.
I think what he does for his teammates, too, is what sticks out the most for me, because he commands so much attention. Because, like you said, nobody can guard him on the floor, and that opens things up. And how about that yesterday? Aaron Wiggins.
Dude,
say it with me.
Yep.
Turp.
Love it. He was absolutely awesome last night. Aaron Wiggins and Alex Caruso last night, really, if you watch this thing, they were the difference, right? Having, you know, Caruso go for 20 off the bench, having Wiggins go for 18 off the bench. I mean, the bench production of Indiana just couldn't match it. And look, they actually got some good minutes out of T.J. McConnell and Benedict Mathurin last night. It just ultimately was too much. That second quarter is really where it feels like the game was won for Oklahoma City. I thought the Pacers were able to withstand the first blow, but then as they got deeper into this thing, it was like, uh-oh. That is all she wrote. I have a criticism, though. I do, and y'all know I would. Tyrese Halliburton, after America sang your praises after hitting that buzzer beater in game number one, you stunk last night. Yes, that's my assessment of it. He stunk last night. 7-13, 17 points. First and foremost, you are Tyrese bleeping Halliburton. Why are you not shooting the ball more than 13 times, son? Why are you not more aggressive? We keep saying it all postseason long, whenever Indiana comes up short. Why? Why do they come up short? Because Tyrese Halliburton was not aggressive enough on the offensive end. 6 assists, 5 turnovers last night. See, he could get away with not being aggressive offensively if it's going to allow his teammates to benefit. But last night, it was nothing he could do. And to his credit, it probably wasn't nothing no guard could do. Okay, this is the best defense I've seen in the NBA. Talking about OKC's team defense and the different schemes and strategies that they deploy. This is the best team defense I've seen in a long time. They got, at every level, they're switchable. They got length. Mark Daigneault extending the ball pressure last night. I know you all saw that if you watched. Their ability to be versatile enough to give you full court pressure looks. They're giving you zone looks. It's amazing, man.
Exactly. After watching that game, I had to hop on the podcast right away for Locked On Wizards. Did y'all see the way OKC played defense?
Yes.
We need to prioritize defense here in Washington if one of those draft picks, and whether that's someone on the interior like Malawak or if Edgecombe falls to you, but I need to see the Wizards swarm around and play defense like that. That is how you win in the postseason.
100%. Like, it's tough because Indiana only has one guy. I don't want to discredit Nembhard. No draft t-shirts out there probably about to have a conniption about it. It feels like Halley, though, is the only guy that can create for himself and others. And that's showing up right now when they're making a concerted effort to get the basketball out of his hands. Part of it comes down to you just got to be him. You just got to be him at a certain point in time and turn up on him. Point blank. 1-800-636-1067 is the number. A lot more to get to as we'll take you up to 10 o'clock here on this Monday night edition of Overtime. You're tapped into the youngest in charge, Lonell Willingham, Ben Strober, a little top behind the glass, taking your calls and playing the funky tunes in and out of break. I know you all probably noticed something about those funky tunes. Lil Carter, son, coming back from break. Speaking of a lot going on, I keep talking about it. It's a busy, busy time here in the DMV. A lot was made about Marshawn Lattimore, Terry McLaurin, and Laremy Tunsil missing voluntary OTAs. Well, tomorrow is the beginning of mandatory minicamp. When we come back, a special installment of Nell's Super Six Pack, my top six most intriguing storylines as we get geared up for mandatory minicamp. That is next here on The Fan.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9-to-5 for a 5-to-9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
What We Spend is a new podcast that explores something we almost never talk about. Every week, you'll hear a different guest share everything they spend their money on. What We Spend is available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Just getting rolling here on this Monday night edition of Overtime. You're tapped in to the youngest in charge, Lonell Willingham. I'll take you up to 10 o'clock. A lot more to get to. We'll take your calls at 1-800-636-1067. You can tweet at me as well. It is at @NELL_BTP. Keep talking about it because it absolutely is a loaded show. We will get into the Washington Commanders coming up momentarily. In about 20 minutes, though, you've heard me teasing it all show long. We'll give you the deets coming up next. A bombshell dropped in the Baltimore Sun earlier this afternoon, detailing the messy exit from College Park that Kevin Willard and former athletic director Damon Evans had. I can't wait to get into that. 8:20, Kevin Sheehan going to join us. We get his thoughts on the piece that was written earlier this afternoon as well. Top of the 9 o'clock hour, final hour of power, Odyssey NFL insider Jason Lockhanfora going to join the program. We get his thoughts on whether or not it's a big deal or not a big deal that Terry McLaurin and the Commanders still haven't come to terms on a contract extension. And then what does Jason Lockhanfora think a potential trade for Terry McLaurin would look like? I know we're a ways away from that, but if the rubber does meet the road and that difficult conversation comes up, just how much should Washington be expecting in return? Jason Lockhanfora going to join us top of the 9 o'clock hour to discuss that. Right now, though, let's get right into it. The most highly anticipated power ranking segment in all of sports talk radio. Me and the committee and little top Ben Strober. Look, we spent all night long burning the midnight oil, getting you the best list possible. It's Nell's Super Six Pack, my top six most intriguing storylines entering mandatory minicamp.
Nell's Super Six Pack.
We'll throw the number system out the window for tonight. Myself and little Top Ben Strober are going to go through these six for you. What do you think about this? One thing that gets me right off the rip, who is the first team offensive line group that goes out there tomorrow? There will be 11-on-11 work. What's the first team offensive line? Now, Ben, when we were putting this together, you said, well, why do you even really care about that? Because that combination is going to shift so many different times throughout this offseason. The hope is by week one, you have your front five solidified. Can I make a prediction here real quick? Can I give you my first team offensive line for tomorrow?
Let's do it.
I think it's Laremy Tunsil at left tackle. He's here, people. I think it is Nick Allegretti at left guard. I think it is Tyler Biadasz at center. I think it's Brandon Coleman at right guard. And I think it's Andrew Wiley at right tackle. Now, notice I omitted a very rich Commanders draft pick talking about Josh Connerly Jr. They're going to make him earn it. Think about the way last year went. Mikey Samer still didn't get tossed out there immediately. Jayden Daniels didn't get tossed out there immediately. That's the first team offensive line group they go with. Who starts the first preseason game? Who starts during joint practice? That's going to matter as well. We'll keep you up to speed on that as well.
Well, one combination that we're going to see change a lot throughout training camp and now mandatory mini camp, and something we've all been waiting to hear about, is what we're going to see out of the wide receiver room. Of course, you bring back Noah Brown this year, and he kind of looks like he's going to be your number two outside receiver. If Terry McLaurin is not there tomorrow, and given that he has not signed that contract extension, probably expect him not to be there. You probably see Noah Brown lining up on the outside, but that's going to allow some more opportunities to maybe get a look at the Commanders' fourth-round draft pick in Jalen Lane. Where does he line up? I know you were boots on the ground in Ashburn last week and saw him catching some screen passes. And I've heard K.J. Osborne look pretty good in OTAs.
Oh, sneaky.
He was banged up last year, and I know everyone was pissed off to see him, you know, inactive every single week in the playoffs, saying, why did we even bring this guy in? But Adam Peters might have been thinking future with a guy like K.J. Osborne.
Bingo. So, real quick here to expound upon K.J., remember how excited we were when Noah Brown was signed? Statistically, throughout the first couple of years of their career, K.J. Osborne, clearly the more decorated wide receiver compared to Noah Brown statistically. He was the number three option in Minnesota. Him and Kirk Cousins, Kirk O'Bangs, as I like to call him, was going Kanye crazy up in Minnesota. So I expect him to make this team. Here's a wide receiver hot take I got for you. I think Luke McCaffrey's roster spot is in jeopardy. And I've been on this all offseason long. When you talk about the emergence of Jalen Lane and K.J. Osborne, and then Michael Gallup has made some plays out there as well, a dude that's retired and came back, so we'll see what ends up happening here. What else you got for us?
Well, another big thing that we bring up is about another draft pick for this Washington team. Where does Kane Medrano line up? Because we have seen so many different things about the elite speed that he provides. Fastest player at the linebacker position out of the NFL draft, killed it at the combine, and now that he's in Washington, where does he line up? Because we know we're going to see the combination of Jordan McGee, Frankie Louvu, Bobby Wagner out there. But if Kane Medrano has that elite speed, we might see him be in a hybrid role. This kind of almost feels like Sua Cravens all over again, but hopefully a much better outcome for that. But it's going to be interesting to see tomorrow where it starts for him.
I totally agree with you. To me, and we'll let you hear the audio clip here in a second, Ben. I'm about to get it over to you. Joe Witt Jr., when he spoke out at voluntary OTAs last week, talked about Kane Medrano, singled him out a little bit. And I think to me, when it comes to Medrano, there were some things on tape. I understand the measurables, right? I understand the measurables. But there were some things on tape that concerned me with him. He's got to tackle better. That was one of his main issues in college, was being a sure tackler. There were a couple of games on tape where he really struggled to be a sure tackler. That worries me, even if he's playing linebacker, or no matter whether if he's playing linebacker or safety, because you got to be able to tackle at both of those spots. He's fast, though, man. And I think adding team speed is definitely a priority, or was a priority for this group in the offseason. Kane Medrano and Jalen Lane, to me, are the two most intriguing prospects that Washington drafted. Two most intriguing. Not saying they're going to be the best, but it's interesting. I can see the ceiling and the floor for both of those two guys being very interesting. Very, very interesting. The ceiling for both of them, I think, is starting week one. I think the ceiling for both of these guys is to be a starter in week one, talking about Lane and Medrano. But for Medrano, where I think he has the leg up in terms of making an impact over Jalen Lane, he's got the ability to play two positions right now at once. Here is Joe Witt Jr. last week talking about two interesting comparisons for rookie linebacker Kane Medrano.
You know, Kane, he's a unique kid because of, you know, his receiver background coming in. Is he a linebacker, really? Is he a safety? Can he do some of the Jeremy Chinn roles? Can he do some of the Frankie Louvu roles? And so we're really testing the kid right now to see, all right, what is he going to be? And we'll really tell a little bit more once we put the pads on. He can really run. Does he have the ability to cover a tight end? Does he have the ability to beat a tackle in the rush? You know, so is he Frankie or is he Jeremy or is he a cross of both? And that's what I'm trying to find out with him.
I love that. That got me fired up. Is he Louvu or is he Jeremy? And I think that question going to be asked sooner rather than later. Real quick, who would you rather him be? I'd rather him be Jeremy Chinn because I think the safety spot needs a dude.
Yeah, I think we don't have much depth at safety right now. And I know Quan Martin is coming off his shoulder injuries that he played through for the majority of last year, but there's going to be some competition maybe for that second spot. Will Harris, Percy Butler, and Jeremy Reeves, a guy that you have been very high on getting an opportunity to play part of this defense in the top 11. It's going to be interesting to see, but if they could have somebody that could fill in as a hybrid role and play safety a little bit, that'd be really nice for him.
For sure. Joe Witt Jr. also spoke about Jeremy Reeves the other day at practice, highlighting him, calling him out, saying, look, I got to find ways to get him on the 11-man or the first-team defense, rather, because he just simply makes plays. The next storyline I'm looking for, the next most intriguing storyline entering mandatory minicamp, who stands out as the potential running back three? I think running back one is very clear, cut, set in stone. It's going to be Brian Robinson. I think running back two, as we saw last year, very clear, cut, set in stone. It's going to be Austin Ekeler, who I think is in for another big time year. His role, we were talking about it, getting ready for the show. Him as a safety valve, the first dude rarely made a miss. And then his dynamic ability on kickoff return, I think is just, it's out of this world. Now, Ben, you brought it up, a really good point. Do they take into consideration his injury history and take him off of kick return? The first two kick returners in practice the other day, I believe it was Deebo Samuel and Austin Ekeler. So it was Ekeler out there still.
My thing with it is, you've already mentioned how good he is as a safety valve. He almost serves as, like you said, a third tight end for this Washington team. And if you value him that much in the passing game, and I think the difference between the Commanders' offense when he was on the field versus when he wasn't was very noticeable. And those injuries were derived from those kick return plays. And I think that Cliff Kingsbury, Dan Quinn, and Adam Peters have to account for that. And I would like to not see him take kick returns this year, but, you know, that's not my choice.
We'll see. So I think those two guys are safe. Ja'Cory Kroski, first and foremost, he's not a lock even to make the roster. That's what you guys need to realize. He's a seventh-round pick. So can he beat out Jeremy McNichols for that running back three spot is really what I'm concerned with. Jeremy McNichols has tremendous special teams value. We saw what he could do as a runner. Chris Rodriguez is another dude I would throw in there as well. We're not talking a lot about Michael Wiley, last year's undrafted free agent running back that they brought in from the University of Arizona. We're also not talking about Kazmir Allen, donning the number 24 now, officially a running back. He looked a little bit beefier out there as well. If Kazmir Allen can win the kickoff return job with Jalen Lane and he shows he can pass protect at the running back spot, he may be the running back that they ultimately keep. 1-800-636-1067 is the number. We'll complete the list coming up on the other side of the break, but I want your calls. As we get geared up for mandatory minicamp tomorrow in Ashburn for the Commanders, what is the most intriguing storyline facing the Washington Commanders? We'll take your calls on that, plus wrap up the list next here on The Fan. One 800 636 1067 is the number right here on this Monday night edition of Overtime. You're tapped into the youngest in charge, Linnell Willingham. I'll take you up to 10 o'clock. Little top Ben Strober behind the glass taking your calls. Let him know what you think about the top most intriguing storylines entering a mandatory minicamp for the Washington Commanders. That's what's on tap right now. We've gone through our top three. We'll refresh you here real quick. Who's on the first team offensive line? And I prefaced this earlier by saying, listen here, you numbskulls. I get it. That combo will change more times than I probably changed my underwear between now and the start of, you know, the regular season. I get that. But whoever gets the first crack at it is interesting to me because that means they have to lose the job. So I'll be super interested in that. The other thing, another top observation, another intriguing observation is talking about the combo of wideouts that you'll see. Right now, I'll say it with my chest poked out. I think the top four receivers for this team are going to be Terry McLaurin, Noah Brown, Deebo Samuel, and Jalen Landon. I think all four of them will play a significant role in the offense. Jalen Lane has been the beneficiary of Terry McLaurin not being around. Peter Schrager randomly on Get Up mentioned or name dropped Jalen Lane. And I said, huh? My spidey senses immediately started tingling. Who's Peter Schrager's one of his best friends, Cliff Kingsbury? So for him to just randomly name drop our fourth round wide receiver on Get Up, clearly Jalen Lane's going to have a big year. I compare his rookie year. I think he's going to have a Terry McLaurin type rookie year. I really think he's going to come on and shock a lot of people in terms of how much they use him. But the wide receiver room is going to be interesting. The other one we went through, Kane Medrano. Where does he ultimately end up lining up? Is he a safety? Is he a linebacker? Is he a hybrid cross of the two? I need him to be a regular contributor on this defense. I think he's got the ability, in terms of height, weight, speed, to be a regular contributor on this defense. Last thing that we left off on, who stands out as a potential, not RB1, not RB2, RB3. We know Eckler and Brian Robinson, in my opinion at least, are firmly entrenched atop this depth chart when it comes to running back. How do the other guys fill in? Does Jeremy McNichols in his special teams chops, is that enough to keep him on the 53? Chris Rodriguez, he's also got special teams chops. Who do they prefer? So that'll be something I monitor as well. And then where does Ja'Cory Kroski-Moret frame into all of this? Because a lot of people have already, you know, started fitting him for his gold jacket size and Canton, putting him in the Hall of Fame. There's a lot I need to see from him before I can, you know, definitively say, hey, look, this is a guy that is going to unseat Brian Robinson as our RB1. I think in a dream scenario, if you're Washington, he's a combo of both Eckler and Brian Robinson. It's kind of how I would look at this thing. Little Top, let's bring it back in here right now. This is one of the observations you came up with as well.
And moving forward, let's talk about a room that we've been talking about here in our nation's capital for quite a few years at this point of the instability that we have seen.
Yeah.
Who's going to line up at corner tomorrow? Mm. Is Mikey Sainer still going to go back to his natural position in the slot? Jonathan Jones, who they bring in from New England, is he going to line up on the outside and get the reps over Trey Amos until he earns the job? I know there was a lot of buzz about what Trey Amos was doing in OTAs, but you know we've seen this in other position groups in years past, and especially in this regime, they are going to make Trey Amos earn this spot. And
yes,
I'm going to whisper it. Uh-oh. Does Lattimore even show up?
No, you didn't. No, you didn't. See, I was thinking it. You said it. You got the kahunas. Clearly, I don't. I didn't see him today on the Commander's Twitter. Didn't see him on the gram. I didn't see him on X.
He's a low-profile guy, but didn't even see the Commanders post him.
Maybe they're playing games.
Maybe.
Or maybe he just skipped out on today and is going to show up tomorrow, bright and early.
He doesn't need media day. That's not his thing, I guess.
It's not his thing. We were looking at his IG. That's what happens when you're dealing with the youngest in charge. We're surfing grams, doing all that. I was looking at his Instagram, and I went, Ben, like, ain't no damn way. If I was to just show some random dude out there who Marshawn Lattimore is, he'd be like, who's this model? Who's this fashion model? He doesn't have any representation of the Commanders at all on his social media.
He wouldn't even know he was in the NFL.
Seriously. He has some weird, like, abbreviation in his bio. You were saying, you were going through the people he follows. Only Jayden Daniels from the Commanders?
Well, he follows, like, 150 people.
And JD5 is one of them, though.
Yeah, I know he knows damn well a lot more than 150 people.
Yes. It's weird. Some people act a certain way on social. I think it's a great question that you ask, and I'm super intrigued by it as well. giving you some insider nuggets that you'll only catch here on Overtime, because I'm out there boots on the ground at mandatory minicamp. With no Lattimore in practice the other day, when they went 11-on-11, it was Jonathan Jones and Trey Amos lined up at the outside corner with Mikey Samuels still lining up in the slot. Every time I talk corner, I feel good about it. I think it's a position group, as Ben mentioned, that was much maligned coming into last year. But when you see the emergence of Mikey Samuels, when you see the emergence of a guy like Noah Igbinoghene, you feel a hell of a lot better about that position group. I want to get to what Ben mentioned at the end there. Does Lattimore show up? If you had to inject me with truth serum right now, I say done. It's no big, I don't think it's any coincidence that they didn't post him on the social. So we'll see tomorrow whether or not he's in attendance. We'll finish up on this. One of my most intriguing storylines entering training camp, mandatory minicamp tomorrow. How does the revamped D-line fare? I was telling, super producer Ben before the show started. To me, they're going to go big, small, and stagger this lineup, specifically on the interior at defensive tackle. I think to start, you'll see Javon Kinlaw lined up next to Deron Payne. I think their immediate replacements will be Johnny Newton and Eddie Goldman. And I think they'll want to have a big in there and a pass rusher in there at all times. It's really playing a traditional nose and then a three technique. I think they'll go with that the entire time. The other thing I'm looking at is this. At defensive end, who lines up opposite Dorrance Armstrong? We know he's going to be one of the starting defensive ends. Who lines up opposite Dorrance Armstrong? Is it Dietrich Wise on obvious rundowns, talking about first and second? Or do we see the young pup, somebody that I've been advocating for a lot? And Ben, I don't know if you were working with me that night that I went on. I actually got the chance to, talk a little bit to Dorrance Armstrong and Javonte Jean-Baptiste as they were walking down to the practice field. And I actually have my brother that I was raised with, one of his college friends went to school, or knew rather, Javonte Jean-Baptiste. They're from the same hometown. So I brought that up to Javonte, and then I told him and Dorrance, I expect 25 from y'all. 25 what? 25 sacks combined. Now, obviously, I'm being a little hyperbolic there, but it got a chuckle out of the fellas, and it got Dorrance to get a little competitive, man. Dorrance Armstrong's got a chip on his shoulder. Dorrance Armstrong feels like last year should have easily been a double-digit sack season for him. We'll install a new segment coming up to exit the show, called Burgundy and Bold, where I'll give you a bold prediction leading up to the Commander season every overtime. One of them may be a sack total for Dorrance Armstrong. I'm buying Dorrance Armstrong stock. 1-800-636-1067 is the number. We'll take a quick timeout. When we come back, we'll pay off the tease. The bombshell that was dropped this morning in the Baltimore Sun surrounding the tumultuous exit of Kevin Willard and former athletic director Damon Evans. We'll, parse through that next here on The Fan.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9-to-5 for a 5-to-9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Service is not available in all areas.
You know how you always want to know about everyone else's money? On the podcast What We Spend, guests will, for 1 week, tell us everything they spend their money on.
My son slammed $6 worth of blueberries in 5 minutes.
And everything that makes them feel.
I want to own a house. I want to have a child. But this morning, I really wanted a coffee.
Because at the end of the day, money is always about more than your balance. Listen to and follow What We Spend, an Odyssey original podcast. Available now wherever you get your podcasts.